Hello, this is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on the world of property supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. And we're live every Sunday, 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. And if you're watching on our website, please leave us a Google review. And if you're watching via social media, get involved in the comments. Our email address is hello@propertymatterstv.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And if you don't have time to watch us live every Sunday, then you can get us on the move with a podcast available on the platforms on the other side of the screen. And we're also live across the week on Dilsay Radio. So let's say hi to our property expert, Joe Joshi. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, everybody. Good morning to our listeners and viewers. And yeah, welcome to a Sunday once again with lots of stuff in property.
Yeah, we're going to be talking millennials today. We have never talked about them, I don't think, not in any detail anyway, on Property Matters, but there's a big issue around millennials and property inheritance. And this story, which I found in the Sunday Times recently, really does capture this rather well. So it involves a young lady called Estelle Kieber, who was heartbroken when her grandmother died unexpectedly of a stroke, aged 75. But once the funeral was over and the mourners had departed, things kind of went downhill. So Kieber was expecting her grandmother's £250,000 inheritance to be split between her and her sister, enough finally to buy a home of her own. Her grandmother had explained to her that her and her sister were to be the only beneficiaries. Kieber and her grandmother had been estranged from Kieber's mother for 4 years. The Nan had told her she didn't want the mum to be able to receive her inheritance, but then, of course, no will was found, and her mother inherited the lot. Such are the vicissitudes of the inheritance game. We're in the midst of what economists are calling the great wealth transfer. This is the bit that's really interesting. With $84 trillion set to change hands globally in the next two decades. For property-hungry millennials aged 28 to 43, it can't come soon enough. But Kieber's experience demonstrates the great expectations do not always come to pass. Britain's theoretical inheritance pot is vast. Over 65s in Britain hold £2.73 trillion in property. £2 trillion of it is mortgage-free, according to Savills. Only 10% of the homeowners in England are people aged 25 to 34, while younger generations are counting on inheritance to get onto the property ladder. For many, the money will be too little, too late. And for the unlucky ones, it won't come at all, or it'll be frittered away on legal disputes. That's quite an astonishing figure, isn't it, Joe? £2.7 trillion is held in property in UK by over 65s, and £2 trillion of it is mortgage-free.
Yes, I mean, there's not any surprise in those vast numbers, Paul. I mean, on this programme for the last 3 years, I have harped on about the fact that how important and why it is so important that people get on the property ladder and start early as much as they can, and because fundamentally the best saving and investment they make throughout their life cycle is the property. It's the only one that they can actually probably control, see gain, you know, have its losses as well as its gains, but mostly its gains over that period. And these numbers just tell you that story of why it is. We are not a nation in the UK of stocks and shares. We're not investing in pensions to a large extent, and there's certainly not enough other insurances that go in. So people tend to want to buy property because that bricks and mortar, Manny, that touching feeling situation is what really makes them feel stronger. And this £2.7 trillion worth of property held, of which, you know, £2 trillion is paid up for, is a vast, vast amount. And clearly, you know, it creates that path of why people want to constantly invest in property. And the numbers that we have talked about speak volumes just for it by itself, don't they?
I suppose there is this presumption that many people think just because I've, you know, secured a property and I've done all the legals and I've got my name on the title deeds and all the rest of it, that you're safe in your house, so to speak. But of course, the one thing that would have helped the situation was if Estelle's grandmother had actually completed a will.
Well, the problem with the will area is such a touchy subject, in all honesty. It has so many connotations of life. And I've spoken to, and you know, to be honest with you, you sort of feel it yourself. I'm sure you've been through it yourself as a father and individual. You question the timing or whether it's right or wrong, whether what's to do, what's the best to do, what kind of advice is available, what advice is good advice, what advice is bad advice, all of that. And sometimes puts you on a bit of a back foot, and then you think, well, I'll do it tomorrow. And sometimes that tomorrow is a bit too late, a bit like this grandmother story, that she'd actually turned around and said to her grandchild and her sister, perhaps, that they were going to be the ultimate inheritance of her estate. But somewhere in that journey, she didn't put that pen to paper and put their name down. And subsequently, the whole thing went pear-shaped. And the reason why those things happen are those emotional situations that people carry in that journey, Paul. And so, you know, people say, okay, I'm going to do this for my children, I'm going to do that for my grandchildren, I'm going to do this for such and such. And then somewhere along the line, that changes. And that's changing a lot, not just in, you know, British culture or American, US culture, in every culture across the nation, across the world now. You know, it's fast track. And I know from, as an Indian chap, I know that all of our families, there be it Asian, you know, Indian, Muslim, Pakistan, whatever, you know, cult, everybody has a fear of what is right and when it is to do that. And the other thing is, of course, we feel that we're immortal. We're just going to never die. We're not, you know, it's not going to happen to me. I'm all right, Jack. It's not going to be me. Somebody else is not very well. And tomorrow, boom, we're gone. So I think it's a whole mixture of that sort of medicine that we have to take. And part of that medicine we take is to say, you know, shall I put pen to paper? And is that the right time to do it now? Or am I going to miss somebody else? Or I'll do it tomorrow. And then sometimes that tomorrow doesn't come. And with that tomorrow not coming is a deck of cards that you don't want to have.
Apparently, Estelle is among a record number of people disputing wills every year, 10,000 and rising in England and Wales every year. And Laura Phillips, who's a legal director at a solicitor's called Kingsley Napley, she says inquiries to the firm about will disputes have risen 20% year on year. The number of claims that are reported don't really touch the sides of the number that are actually settled out of court. Because an increase in property prices, estates have become more valuable. There's a bigger pot and there's more to fight over. Another factor is that the family links are more complex than they used to be, as many as one of three families are thought to be blended, the product of a remarriage and a multiple parentage. This adds all manner of complications. And they talk about somebody called Polly. Polly's father died when she was very young. And when her mother remarried, she brought the bulk of the wealth to her new marriage. But when Polly was 29, her mother died of a short illness, passing her money to the husband. He died less than 12 months later. And because her stepfather had not made a will, the wealth passed to his children, excluding Polly, despite the fact that a significant part of his estate had originated from her mother. That just goes to show, it just goes down another avenue, doesn't it?
Well, this is what I was just saying, that because of all of those other mixtures that come into the system, you're never sure which is the right direction to go. And is when you say the blend, I mean, the blend is now the norm. You know, there wasn't a time when that blend was there. We had a sort of direction. But yes, now separations, divorces happen, new marriages happen, stepchildren, stepparents happen, different cultures happen, different cultures blend in. And when you look at what is right in one culture is definitely not right in another culture. And it's amazing how many of these things you come. But the reality of it all is that people don't feel there is no succession planning at all, though that is what should happen. And if people would do succession planning and would put down pen to paper, part of that is an emotional issue, Paul, and that is that, you know, am I ready to do this? Should I do this now? Is that going to be fair on Freddie, or is that going to be fair on Mark or Sid or, you know, Jatinder in this case, or anyone else? Is it going to be, you know, well, is it going to be right for all those people? And the question is, you then put your mind at those scenarios and you sit down and you think, I'll do it tomorrow, you know, and then tomorrow something else changes. So, but in secret and in private, I think everybody should think about what will happen if they were not here. Because we all know one thing is for sure, we're all going to go. It's this question of when and how. And that is another mix. The how business is a huge thing. Number of people, I mean, statistics recently said there was a time when it used to be maybe one in 10 people that might have suffered from things like cancer or whatever. They brought that down to one in two. That's 50% of people that will go, no, nobody wants that to happen. But, you know, the least of the people that you look at sometime and talk to come around and say, guess what, you know, is going to be this. And then the clock starts ticking. But even at that point, they are so confident in their belief that it's not going to be them. They're going to fight it and come through. And then somebody else is left to that. So, of course, whilst there's benefits to families, the real beneficiaries is the legal system. They're the ones that come along in the background and start to take out, because all of a sudden you've got a dispute. Like this young lady did, they had a dispute, you know, they started to challenge somebody, and the next thing you know, people are rubbing their hands in saying, well, welcome to my office, because this is, you know, my time now, catch up and cash up. And so, you know, the system tells you that you, at that point, you think, I wish I'd done this and I wish I'd done that. But right now, if you turn around and say to someone, you're almost thinking, or they're thinking, oh, you're wishing this upon me. And it's not the case of wishing it upon somebody. What is right and how people will be left with at the end is actually in your own hands. But so the millennials now are suffering of all the changes that have happened in that period. For example, the blend of families has become a huge thing. You know, divorce and separation is not something that is, you know, rare as it maybe used to be when I was growing up. It is now the norm. It happens. And because if it happens, there is no succession. There's no planning. They don't think about what the consequences. And I've known of real life stories, let alone what we're talking about here, of people that have come to me and sat with me and sort of said, you know, we've got at this stage, what do we do? And sometimes it's early enough to catch it. And another time, it's too late to catch it because that situation has passed and it's already fallen into legal battles or areas that you think I can't deal with, and how do I deal with it? And then, of course, there's things like taxation. You know, that's just another can of worms that is opened up because of those situations, and people don't prepare and plan for those things. And in comes, you know, the taxman. I was always told that the two people that will always collect no matter what happens in your life is the bank manager and the tax man. You know, you might think you've got away with it, but, you know, they're going to take what they're owed before anybody else gets it. And so, you know, it's, and so those, whilst they're sort of funny things to think about, they are real things.
Well, the resolution to Polly's story was that she tried to reach out to her stepbrother, but he wasn't interested. So she did actually seek legal advice, and they settled out of court. So eventually she got something from the situation. But the interesting thing is, even for those who do get a large wad of inheritance, rising life expectancy means it often arrives much later than they might have hoped. People born in the 1980s, for example, can expect to receive their inheritance when they are 64, according to the Institute for Fiscal Studies, and Gen Zs, or Gen Zs as they're often called, aged 12 to 27, they will get it much later. My parents took early retirement a few years ago after they experienced some health issues in their 50s, says Sam, a bar manager from Manchester. On one hand, it's fair enough that they should enjoy their retirement, but on the other hand, I need help to get on the housing ladder. My mum and dad seem more bothered about going on fancy holidays and spending their pension lump sum on themselves. They have wildly underestimated how much I'll need to buy a flat. They think it's the 1990s, when flats in Manchester were still 60 grand. It's an interesting comment, isn't it?
Well, look, it's a little bit of an unfair comment, in all honesty, because I would think that if they have taken an early retirement, they've earned it, they've worked hard for it, and somebody shouldn't be looking through that, you know, looking glass to say, well, actually, they're having a good time and I'm not getting on the property ladder. I think it's really up to you to make your own wealth. Your parents have probably, or his parents have probably done a great job in giving him whatever he needed to do. And now he's just sitting there, and that is a huge issue today. A lot of youngsters are like that. They don't want to get up and go out and do what they're supposed to do because they can see that ultimately they might inherit and they might get some money earlier, and that's going to be this. We never got it. That guy's parents probably never got it because they worked hard. But today, people, the Z people will look at it and go, "Well, actually, it's my rightfully going to be mine. So why can't I have that? And why can't you give me that so I can step on the ladder?" My answer to that would, I mean, a man with two is you got to put something into this. Get some skin in the game, but put some effort into your work and so forth. And yes, collectively, I'm sure my wife and I will be able to help you. But if you have no skin in the game and you feel that you want to just travel around the world and be a barman or whatever it is that you want to do, then you can't expect someone to turn around and just give it to you, and they should not be giving up what they've worked hard enough to enjoy. But because there is huge amount of wealth in property nowadays, Paul, and there is so much equity in property, people have their eye on that and they think, okay, well then that's going to happen. I'm going to get that. And because of that, they maybe don't put as much effort and as energy as perhaps the people that are sitting on that 2.2 million paid up trillion to 2 trillion paid up property, because they work all that time to do that. So the question you have to ask yourself is that going to be the case in maybe another 30, 40 years' time when these people, these youngsters, are going to get to that stage? Or are they going to turn around and say, "Well, actually, I didn't, there was no pain, no gain, Paul." That's the bottom line. So if they've not had the energy to put into it, they don't value it, And I've also seen when people have given their kids an early present to say that, then they get estranged because they are not going to be with people that perhaps you thought they were going to be. Then they end up having a separation, and these are the questions that come to me all the time as a property guy, because as a property person, it's where most of their wealth is. So they come over and ask the question and say, "Well, how do I do this?" And then perhaps they paid them early or gave them a gift early, they married and they then divorced and they then separated. That benefit of that person that's worked hard and given you that is all she is all she or now just been flushed down the toilet because of their kids' circumstances, who then will perhaps look at them again in his or her second round of marriage and say, "Well, actually, I'm now stuck in a rented property because I had to get rid of it because I divorced the last one and I want to get married again." And he looks to the same parents again and says, "Could I have some more money because I want to get on the property ladder again?" And the question is, where do you start and where do you finish that? And so all of these mixes that are happening are causing these questions. And then the problem is that it's sometimes just too late to happen. And so if you look at the stories that we covered of those different people, where someone has the two sisters thought they were going to get it because the grandmother was estranged from their mother, look what happens. Not putting something on paper meant that the estranged mother that she spent 4 years not talking to is the one that actually took all the money. A step situation, because the stepfather didn't leave a will. The original person that whose pet mother put in as much money into the pot is the one that ended up with probably a settlement, really, because she rightfully had. And there was a program, I think, recently on TV again about these things, where there was a scenario where two boys, brought into their family a friend who they thought would help, and ultimately he became the ultimate winner because he was the one that was looking after the parents whilst the others left, or they left the house. So, this is a common story, but the only way they can look at saving these stories is to put pen to paper, is to think about those futures, and is to think about succession planning and how that is going to happen. Even if it's done privately or secretly, it is something that everybody should think about.
One economist at the Resolution Foundation suspects that the great millennial wealth transfer will, in many cases, skip a generation. If a millennial inherits at the age of 60, and they've already bought their house and nearly paid off the mortgage, and have a comfortable pension, then they might just pass that straight on to their children and avoid all the taxes in doing so, of course. And they warn that the late inheritance may confine many younger people to the rental market for decades, damaging the economy. Typically, owning a house with a mortgage costs less, of course, than private renting, which enables people to have more liquid savings, consume more and invest more in their pension. And one of the movements that's gaining popularity started in the States, Joe, is the giving while living movement. One solution is the King Lear approach, they call it, giving children and grandchildren their inheritances while alive. This has the potential to backfire, though, if donors die within 7 years of transferring the wealth. The recipient is liable to pay inheritance tax on these potentially exempt transfers, known as PETs. In 2021, 13,380 transfers were liable for this tax, costing the payers up to £1.4 million, depending on timing. And that is a key with all of this, isn't it? It's really difficult to know when to do that, because there is this seven-year thing, you know, as long as you survive it by 7 years, everything's fine. But, of course, 13,380 people fell foul of that in just 1 year in 2021.
Well, like I said just earlier on, the two people that will collect either way, one way or another, will be the revenue and will be the bank manager. And here is a scenario of where, you know, we think that we can do this. But again, it's as you rightly say, it's timing. And the timing is, when do you do that, and how do you do that? And the only way to do it is to actually give it. The question is, by giving it and perhaps not outliving that 7 years, you know, there is still a tax liability that is going to be there for those that inherited and for the people that have given it out. So it's going to come out of the estate. You know, by the way, you gave away, I don't know, £1 million, it's not 7 years, so you still got money to pay on that, and they've got to pay tax, and you've got to pay tax, or your estate's got to be paying tax. So, you know, timing is everything in most things. But the first and foremost that we can only say here on our show is that it's good advice and good guidance to be able to say, I think, privately or publicly, you know, do put pen to paper, do set your rules out, and do make sure that an appropriate executor has been appointed, so that, you know, when the time comes, these things can be executed in the correct orderly fashion. But unfortunately, because of the blend of the life that is now, it does make it very, very difficult. But and people don't think about what's going to happen after, because they're not prepared for the after. And it's not my problem. I remember speaking to a very wealthy gentleman once, and I said to him, have you made, you know, your succession plan? And he just looked at me, and his answer was, well, you know, my kids haven't really been that nice to me over the years. So he says, you know, stuff them, basically. And that's my politer way of telling you what he actually said. And so they paid a heck of a price at the end, and I watched that situation unfold right in front of my own eyes. And he just simply said, I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to go and basically live my life the way I want to, and to hell with them, because they've not been so. So there's a lot of things that, you know, people take into consideration. And yet, I mean, literally, I can tell you, I was in the car with this chap, and he pulled over, literally parked his car, looked me in the eyes, and he went, you know what? I like what you're saying, but I'm telling you now, it ain't going to happen. And the reason why he did it is because the kids just were not nice kids. So he says, stuff them. So there's a whole bunch of things that happen in people's lives that will drive them to that. And there are people in the system that will obviously welcome that, including, you know, law firms who are sitting there purely for that business. They know that this is going to happen, and this is how they want it. So it's a system. But to buck the system, there are things that I think people should do, but won't always do, because there's emotion. And how do you put a price on emotion? You can't.
Yeah, so Steve Webb is a big fan of giving while living. He's the former pensions minister. He's a Liberal Democrat MP as well. He's been very vocal in supporting the movement. He says there's a phrase, early money is like yeast. Although it's lovely to inherit significantly at 60, that money would have done so much more for you at 30 or 40. People in their 30s or 40s are taking a huge 35-year mortgage, of course. They may well be into retirement by the time they pay it off. At the moment, we think I'll spend what I need, and then it's what's left at the end is my adult, nearly retired children can then have it. We need to change the mindset, he says. Who suggests that giving money to children while you're still alive has the added pleasure of seeing them enjoying it? So basically what he's saying is that, you know, when they're nearly retired, the children themselves, it's not going to do as much good as it would have done when they really needed the money. And also, if you do give early, you get the joy of seeing them enjoy the money.
And I don't disagree with him. I think it's a great sort of charitable status to have, to see that child grow, the family grow, and so forth. But what I'm saying is that it's the unknown that people get really more scared of. It's not knowing who that person is going to settle with, male or female, or nowadays male and male and female and female and all that kind of stuff. We don't know where that is going to end. So people don't want to give. It may not have been as apparent maybe 40, 50 years ago, but it is now the norm, Paul. And the problem with that is, being that the norm makes people more wary about how they want to leave that inheritance. And so, and also, I mean, I can tell you there have been scenarios where people have signed things over much earlier and their children have then ousted them out of their own properties because they now have lost control and given that 7-year scenario and said, well, actually, that's paid up. Off you go. You're not required anymore. Thank you very much. So there's a lot of emotion that goes into this situation. And it's a touchy subject by anyone's stretch of imagination. It doesn't matter what creed, kind, culture you are. It is a really, really difficult subject. But we can only suggest that it's good advice to put pen to paper at some stage of your life, sooner rather than later. And help everybody to achieve those goals, including yourself. But it is not something that is going to go away in a hurry. And it's an important thing that we bring to our listeners and our viewers, that it's good advice to put something in writing.
Machiavelli once wrote, a son can bear the equanimity of losing his father, but the loss of his inheritance may drive him to despair. And I think that's kind of what you're saying there.
That's what I'm saying.
Critics giving while living approach say that this lets the government off easy, transferring the responsibility for solving the high housing crisis and wage stagnation to wealthy parents. And there's another big problem, of course, social care. Mr. Broom suggests that older generations overconsume housing and are often reluctant to downsize, partly because property is a tax-efficient way to pass on wealth, but also because that wealth may be required to pay for social care. As many as 1.7 million people could be living with dementia in England and Wales by 2040, a far, far higher figure than previously forecast. Demand for social care is rapidly outstripping supply. In 2022-23, the government received 2 million requests for social care in England. Money and family is rarely a straightforward combination, but this confluence of rising care and housing costs, huge wealth transfers, and increasing complex family dynamics promises to make inheritance a defining issue of the coming decades. Yeah, it really is. And as you say, with all the blended family complications and various other things, it is a minefield, and you can see why the lawyers are rubbing their hands with glee, I suspect.
Yes, I mean, look, it's a real emotional issue. It's not one point that it solves or it doesn't solve. We have discussed on our program here before, when people have a big home and they don't want to leave that home. Well, part of that is that, you know, they don't feel that they want to downsize. And secondly, is that they don't feel that they want to pay up or lose the money of the taxation, or, you know, because the home is exempt from any capital gains because that's their main family home. And if they downsize, they'll pay a stamp duty again to purchase another property. You know, it's a constant way of losing money out of the system that you've worked hard to put into the system in the first place. Then the question of, reducing the housing availability. Well, that housing availability really isn't a big issue at the top end. It's the availability issue is at the bottom end. And that is where planning laws and size and accommodation and all those things that come into it. But if you've got a big house or a large property and a large plot of land, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're the one that's causing it, you know. But that's the green-eyed monster situation. They look at it and go, look at that person, they're living in a very, very nice house, big house, they could do this and they could do that. Actually, before you start looking at over the garden fence, over the neighbors, maybe people should look at themselves and say, well, actually, how do I step myself onto the property ladder? How do I, you know, work with my family to achieve those goals? How can I, you know, win that situation? That situation within families has, you know, I mean, look, I always say sometimes when somebody is going to go separate ways, it's three things for me, you know, as a property guy. It's one sale and two properties to purchase again, because they're both going to go and buy something or rent something. So it's the wheel of succession. It happens a lot, but it's not always the right thing. And sometimes people are, after the event, regret it and say, you know what, in hindsight, I'm sure we could have worked it out as it is, but you know, emotions are such that once you made that decision, I'm going to go, that's not going to happen. Everything else almost doesn't matter until you start seeing the bills coming in for all the services and all the advice and all the guidance and all the other things that everybody sort of tags on. Then you think, God, I've just paid out a hell of a lot of money for something that I probably shouldn't have had to pay out if we had taken all the right steps. But that's the part. We don't take the right steps.
And just to take this all full circle, as we wrap up this story, as for Estelle Kieber, the original lady we talked about with her estranged mother and a grandmother, she found a silver lining, says the story, amid her crushing disappointment over her grandmother's inheritance. Although she was unsuccessful in challenging the mother, whom she no longer speaks to and remains renting in Leicester, but there is one good thing about it, she says, the story and the events actually brought me and my sister much closer together. So there was something of a benefit taken out of the story. And that's all we have time for this week on Property Matters. Big subject, inheritance for millennials. And I think we've covered that full and wholesomely, shall we say. Joe, thanks ever so much. We'll see you again for another Property Matters very soon.